Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 13th. I'm Ray Graff. Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York, is on the line this afternoon to answer your questions about little Fluffy and Fido at home. Our Pets and Vets program is always popular, so give us a call to ask your question about your dog or cat. The number's 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Anything is possible today. I can't believe I just read that. Dogs, cats, Dr. Ron Scharf, your call's coming up on Vox Pop right after this pause for the news and right after I fire the scriptwriter. It's coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. Here to take your calls is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf is an 85 grad of the Veterinary College at Cornell with extensive background in veterinary medicine, as you might expect. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Popular show, these Pets and Vets, so call early. And we'll give you some time to load up the lines. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. If you're emailing a question, make sure that you provide a lot of information so that we can be positive. We have all of it. All right, you know, I got to tell you, our producer Jackie Orchard writes the scripts, and frankly, she's fired. I've had enough of the wordplay. Dr. Scharf, how are you?
Ray, it's so good to be with you again. It's been many years since I've done the show on the telephone. This used to be a no-no, now it's normal. Yeah. I hope you're doing well, and it's great to be back.
Everybody doing well on your end?
Yes, everybody's doing great. Thank
good,
you.
Good, man, good. Well, it's going to be a busy show. The number is 800-348-2551. Got this email quite a while ago, and since we're waiting for the lines to load up, it's a little longer than I normally would read an email, but we will do this. This is from Sally in Guilderland. Sally writes, "My best friend is a 3-year-old Samoyed white German Shepherd, possibly wolf mix, that I adopted a year and a half ago. He's 72 pounds, very tall. He often flinches at sudden movement, and he fear pees sometimes when I tell him what to do, especially if a man tells him what to do, to the point where I've wondered if he had a UTI or something. He also guards his hindquarters. This is a problem because Samoyeds need a lot of grooming, and when I adopted him, he was super matted, and I'm still working on getting all the matting out of his butt area. I shampoo and condition, but he yelps even if I go near his butt. Questions. One, should I assume based on these behaviors that my adopted bud was abused at one point? If so, what can I do to make him feel safe besides endless love and cuddles? Two, if his butt is matted, does it actually hurt him to have the matting touched, or is he just scared? And then there's a third part, but let's handle those first.
So the answer to question number one is yes. If he flinches often when, somebody, especially a guy, raises his hand, is that what you said?
Raises his voice, even.
Raises his voice. The fear peeing could be previous abuse. But there are also dogs that pee when they're excited. In other words, you walk in the room, they're happy to see you, and piddle, okay?
Nice.
So, but if they look scared, and usually you could tell when a dog looks scared versus excited / happy.
Yeah.
That could easily be that they had a previous bad experience during their wonder weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
And did have an experience with someone with a low voice that was threatening them and may even have followed through physically.
Okay.
So question number one, it sounds pretty suspicious for some degree of abuse.
Okay.
Question number two, the butt.
Yeah.
So it is important to get the mats out because they could cause irritation, they could cause discomfort, they can cause a dermatitis, and even worse. So it is good to have them be groomed. Now, there are ways to get them acclimated, but better than trying to just get the dog acclimated, it would be better to embark on a behavior modification course.
Ah.
So this is where you are doing quote-unquote exercises. You're doing things that teach the dog that there are other ways to respond to situations in the world. And this is true for any behavior consult that I do, is you start with behavior modification that employs two fancy terms that I'll explain.
Okay.
One is counter-conditioning, and the other is desensitization. The counter-conditioning is teaching them a new behavior for their repertoire. That behavior is called settle. And what you, the way that you teach a dog settle is when there's nothing going on that's setting them off, and they're not nervous, and they're comfortable, you start introducing them to that word, or whatever word you want, it doesn't matter what the word is, but you're teaching them that when they hear that word, they're going to get a treat if they do indeed settle, if they do indeed get into a relaxed frame of mind. That dog learned at that time early on that the flinching and the fear is the only way to respond to that situation, which at that point was the case. However, we are 3 years removed from that, and there are things now, but it does take a lot of effort and time and training to teach a dog a new behavior. It's like what I tell people, like turning the Titanic around. You know, it takes a while.
Sure
so
does.
The desensitization is once they have learned the meaning of the word settle, is to then progressively get them more and more used to the most minor cues that would have provoked a bad response in the first place. So you take a dog, say, with a noise phobia, you know, thunderstorms or July 4th or whatever. Once you've teach them that settle will get them something good if they stay relaxed, then you have a recording of fireworks or thunder that you put the volume on to a very low number, like number one on your dial, and then you put them into a settle. They see, well, this is not that big a deal, and they get a treat, and then you try number one several times, and then you go to two.
Right.
Because you don't want to go too fast. You want to do little tiny baby steps. And then eventually, they're learning. They're all the way up to whatever, volume 7 or 8 or 9, and they're saying, this is no problem. So that when a thunderstorm actually comes, or July 4th, they are now better equipped to deal with it and respond in a different behavior than what they were doing in the first place.
Right.
So just trying to attack, quote unquote, the flinching on its own without doing all that preliminary work would be much more challenging than teaching the settle over the course of many weeks or even months beforehand, and then trying to desensitize them to the smallest low voice that you could imagine. And then a less small low voice, kind of a weird string of adjectives.
Yes.
And then you get them used to that.
Okay.
So then when they're in the settle, you could start acclimating them to the clipping of their mats, because what you're going to do is you're going to approach it in a very quiet and small way. Just make the tiniest little clip with the clipper. And then if they haven't freaked out and gotten all fussy, you give them a treat, you make a big party. What a good boy, what a good boy, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then you graduate up to more and more, I shouldn't say aggressive, but more and more definitive grooming, more and more definitive clipping to take care of those mats.
Now, do the mats actually, does it hurt to touch the mat, or is it okay?
It does not hurt unless it is pulling at the skin because it's been there too long. So if it's been there too long, that typically a shepherd doesn't have mats because it's not as long-coated a breed as other breeds, okay? So the longer the coat of an animal, the more the mats they get. Okay.
Now, this is a mix, though, right? So this is a dog I've never heard of, a Samoyed, I guess?
Yeah, that's a big white dog.
Right. Okay, and then I guess a double coat on this thing, right?
Yeah. So you need to get them used to being brushed. And then when they are used to being brushed, you can then proceed to brush them in the area that they are sensitive about, like that hiney end.
Yeah.
Okay? Because they've already learned, you know, I'm getting brushed on my neck, and I got a treat because I didn't fuss.
Right.
And, oh, I got brushed on my top line, you know, my dorsum, and it didn't bother me, and I got a treat because I didn't fuss. And then the legs. And then you're doing all these body parts, and then you step up to the pièce de résistance, and you go to the butt. And then they learned from all the previous times, the neck, the limbs, etc., that, well, it didn't hurt me then, and I got a treat. Maybe I'll give this one a try without freaking out. So okay. That's a long-winded answer.
You betcha.
Because behavior modification is a long-winded operation.
Well, that's very good. And there was another part, but frankly, I think the show will be over. So let's take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest today. It's Pets and Vets. And, you know, he's not in the studio. It's the first time in years. But he's going to answer your questions coming up. It's Vox Pop, Pets and Vets today. Ray Graff here, joined by Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. And the number to call is 800-348-2551. Let's jump right to the phones. And Maria in Salisbury, Connecticut is first. Maria.
Yeah, hi. I have a 10-year-old female lab that all of a sudden acts like she's got dementia. It came on very quickly, like in the past 2 or 3 weeks. She'll walk around in circles. She's very anxious. She's still eating well. She pants a lot. I've already taken her to the vet. Complete blood work, urine sample, fecal sample. She x-rayed her back because she thought she was a little bit ouchy in the back. And she was also an avid barker, and she's hardly barked. And right now she's on – she did have – she urinated in the house a couple times. She defecated once. And like I said, this came on like within 2 weeks. And the only thing that has changed in her life is the fact that she went from plain interceptor to interceptor plus. And the vet said that, you know, that probably didn't have anything to do with it. But why would she so suddenly, you know, change? I mean, she used to be a happy-go-lucky little dog, and now she just isn't the same. And right now she's on Baytril because she did have a little bit of an ouchy back. And she's on an antibiotic for she had a little bit of a urine problem. But her whole temperament has changed in 2 weeks. And I was just wondering if the interceptor could have done something to her personality.
So I'm pretty much in agreement with your veterinarian, Maria. I really doubt that. I can't. You can never guarantee that some change like that is causing something, but I think it's pretty unlikely. Now, you said that she was walking in circles. Is that right?
Yeah, she'll go around the house in circles. She'll go outside and go in circles. And like I said, she used to be quite the barker, and she's hardly barked at all within 2 weeks. And
is she unsteady?
That's just not her unusually. I'm sorry?
Is she unsteady on her feet?
She's pretty good, but she always likes to go for a walk or likes to go in the car, and she's just kind of lost her zest for that. I mean, like I said, she's still a very avid eater, and she's not in any pain or anything, but she's just not her usual self, and it just came on. So, I mean, I've had dogs before, and of course, you know, they gradually get into, you know, old dog syndrome, but this just came on, like, quickly, and like I said, it happened, like, right after she got the Interceptor Plus, and that just kind of worried me.
Well, if it's that worrisome to you, stop the Interceptor Plus and see what happens.
Okay.
I doubt but you could also have your vet call the company that makes the Interceptor Plus and say, here's what's happened. Have you ever heard of this? And just get their information just on the off chance that they've seen that
before. Yeah, because that was the first time she was ever on Interceptor Plus. And you know, maybe it was just coincidental and whatnot. But the blood work showed nothing. And I don't know. I'm sorry?
Do you see her eyes make motions back and forth or up and down that are not usual?
No.
Does she have any ear problems?
No ear problems. She does have liver issues, and she was on milk thistle, but now she's on the vet. I haven't started yet, but she Demamarin. For her,
yeah. So you don't see her eyes moving back and forth, and she doesn't have ear problems. You don't see her shaking her head or scratching at her ears at all, Maria?
No.
Okay. So it's unlikely that she got sudden dementia, okay?
Yeah.
Dogs do get dementia, but it's not sudden. It's over the course of many months, actually.
Yeah.
And 10 years old is not that old, especially for a lab. They have a tendency of living forever. So I would think that the number one thing I would wonder about is the liver. okay?
Yeah.
Because if her liver number is up enough to be put onto the milk thistle and the Denimarin, something's going on in that organ. And if there's something going on in the organ, then I wonder, could it be making her insides feel bad in a way that's making her behave in a way that's, you know, whether it's fear or whatever. But I'm not sure why you wondered, did she get sudden dementia? Because you have not described any cognitive changes that I would think about dementia hearing. So is there anything else that she's doing or behaving that would be like, when I say cognitive changes, I'm talking about dogs, say, standing there staring at a wall for a long time.
Or
getting lost in a corner. Or about to go out and be excited, but their head goes to the hinge side of the door when they've known for years and years that the door opens on the other side. So those are cognitive changes. You haven't seen anything like that.
No. She's always, I got her when she was 6 months old, and she had come from an abusive situation in the South. So I don't know what her early years were. I mean, she's, she's a little bit leery of strange people and whatnot. I've had her for 10 years, and she's a sweet little dog. But the no barking bothers me because she, you know, as soon as the other dogs bark and see something out the window, she's there, and she just doesn't do that anymore. Like I said,
she's got something on her mind. She's got something on her mind, Maria. And at Cornell, in my education, I was taught that you treat the treatable. Now, the treatable is we already know two things. We know there's something going on in the liver, though we don't know what, and we know that she's got a UTI because she's on the Baytril for a urinary tract problem. So the questions in my mind is what is going on in that liver, okay?
Well, that's,
and for that, I would recommend an ultrasound done by a radiologist.
She had an ultrasound 3 years ago, and she has an enlarged liver.
Okay.
Well, I would look into that because if she had it 3 years ago, that means it's a chronic thing. And now it's getting to the point that it may have nothing to do with her behavior changes, but maybe it does. Those are the things that we know, the liver and the bladder, or the urinary tract, I should say. So I would start digging, figuratively speaking, and finding out. And sometimes the only way to find out what's going on in the liver is to get a little sample. So if she gets an ultrasound, under the ultrasound guidance, you can get a biopsy without having to do surgery, and find out what you're dealing with, and then it would be a little less challenging to answer your question about why she's behaving like this.
Well, Maria, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest on Pets and Vets today. Elizabeth in Goshen. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
We adopted about 4 months ago a mix Mastiff, Roddy, not sure, 112 pounds, 3 feet, 4 inches high, 3 feet, 8 inches long, has a face like a lab and acts like a lab, but much bigger. So anyway, pretty healthy, except for some anal gland problems. But lately he has been straining his shoulders, limping on one side, the other, limping in the other side. Couple days later, he's fine. What might be going on? Is it the harness we're using?
Okay, so the first thing I think about, Elizabeth, when I hear of what we call a shifting leg lameness, is a tick-borne disease. So that means either Lyme disease or anaplasmosis. And there's a simple way to find that out.
No. Sure, no. He just got cleared from all that. I'm talking about he has stiff limping on one side, and then,
and
then in a couple of days, then it. But I'm just saying that it's not both at the same time.
No, I'm not saying at the same time. I'm saying a typical presentation for a dog with Lyme disease is to be favoring one leg, and then the next week they're favoring a different leg because there's more than one joint. It's what's called a polyarthropathy.
Right.
There's more than one joint involved. And so it's not happening at the same time. Okay. If it's not a tick-borne disease, then that's a much more challenging situation, and I'd wonder about other things. But I'm, in this case, wondering about a false negative on your test. The test that I'm thinking about is called a 4DX. It's one that most vets use, but it checks for not only heartworm, but Lyme and the other two tick-borne diseases. So I would wonder about a tick-borne disease, and if the test was correct, then I'm wrong, and if the test was incorrect, then he would likely respond to an antibiotic, Elizabeth.
All
but
right.
If it's not tick-borne, then I'm wondering about a more, I wouldn't say exotic, but a more unusual situation. Now, is it both, is it front legs only, or is one of the back legs involved?
Oh, she's gone, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, well, no problem. Because if it's front legs only, the next thing I think about is neck, because the neck could cause limping in the front leg.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest today on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. And let's now go to sunny, warm Florida. Sylvia, are you enjoying yourself
top
down there?
Top of the afternoon to you, gentlemen.
Hi.
And the first thing, Dr. Scharf, I thank you and Cornell, your alma mater, for having such a wonderful relationship with the seeing eye down through the years. I have had seeing eye dogs for about 50 years, which leads me to my question. Nothing worse than a blind seeing eye,
yes.
dog.
Okay.
So I want to know, what is pannus, and is it more typically seen in German Shepherds?
Pannus is difficult. So it's more commonly seen in boxers, is my understanding, though, whatever, you know, any breed can get it. And it's a creeping corneal problem that is producing irritation to the cornea. So when the cornea's got irritation, it'll grow new blood vessels because cornea is normally an avascular structure. But without blood, you can't heal stuff. So the eye deals with problems by growing new blood vessels into the cornea, which it doesn't have them normally because it needs to be a totally transparent structure. In order for the light to get through and for us to see well, you can't be having vasculature, you know, blood vessels there. So it would interfere with the vision, depending upon how bad the pannus was, but it could be treated by medication. And usually the medication's enough, though sometimes it is not. But in the vast majority of cases, I think that pannus is something that could be kept under control. So, Sylvia, are we on medication?
Yes, drops every day.
And what's that medication doing for your pup?
I think it is clearing up, probably. Its eyes aren't so red now.
Well, that's excellent. It might be something that you keep the dog on. It might be something that may need to be kept up indefinitely because sometimes it could come back. And so has the dog been seen by an ophthalmologist?
Yes, he has been, and that's what I was told for the rest of his life, every day.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. And I applaud your having gone to a specialist because they know more. And, you know, I think that that's your best bet. And then maybe you'll need a recheck once or twice a year, you know, just to make sure you stay on track. But, you know, your original question is there something peculiar to Shepherds? No, it's not. You know, be glad just because you don't have a boxer. How's that?
No, I've always had German Shepherds, and this is the first one that's had the eye disease. So I'm fortunate, I suppose. But and generally, my dogs have been extremely healthy, and he didn't develop this until he was 8 years old. So I'm suppose I'm lucky there too. But
well, it's an acquired disease. You're welcome. It's not a congenital. Not something that they're born with. It's an acquired disease. So him getting it when he was 8 is not surprising.
Well,
you know,
Sylvia,
8 good years.
Thank you very much for the call from sunny Florida. How nice to hear from that state right about now. David in Sullivan County. David, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Trust everybody's in good health.
So far.
My
so
question.
So good.
Go ahead, there, David.
Good to hear. My question is, I have a mixed Bernese dog. After grooming him as the winter ended, he got two spots on his back where the hair is not growing back quite as fast. They're like splotches. And I was wondering what we might be able to do. He does roll on the ground, And but beyond that, that's about it.
Okay.
How long have you had this Berner / Pyrenees dog, David?
How long have I had the dog?
Yeah.
4 years.
Okay. So you've never seen this problem before?
There was a time when I had him groomed and up by his neck, all the hair disappeared and I had to go for a whole process of cleaning him and keeping it dry.
So is he going
that
at
was
it,
about
David?
2 years ago.
Is he licking at the bald spots or is he chewing at the bald spots or rubbing them in any way?
Not that I've noticed. Not that I've noticed.
Where are they on his back? Top or bottom or underside or?
One's on the side by his rear, and the other is on the top by his rear, forward of his tail.
Well, if you had told me that you had seen him licking or chewing, I would say allergy. This is major allergy season, okay? Allergies cause itches in dogs.
Okay.
But it does not sound like that's the situation because you would know that he's going at himself. And you're not seeing, you didn't mention any seeing any skin changes, David. Do you see any redness, inflammation, you know, abrasions or scabs or anything like that?
No, not that I've noticed, no.
And he's totally bald. There's no hairs there?
No, there's hair there. It's just, it just is losing a lot of hair, noticeably.
So there's something going on for about sparse.
Half weeks. Go ahead.
It's sparse hairs. There are some hairs there, but not as thickly as
yeah.
he normally has.
Correct. You're on the nine.
Okay. So, that's a tough one. You know, usually the most common thing that's going to cause
not, and he's, and,
go ahead,
he's not
David.
Neutered either.
Okay, he's not neutered.
Okay. Usually the most common things that will cause that kind of thing, David, is either parasites, like fleas, okay, in which case you would probably see him chewing at himself, or allergies, which also cause an itch, and you would see him chewing at himself. So fleas or parasites in general and allergies would account for 90 or 95% of whatever you're seeing. So in the absence of those things, you might want to consider doing a little diagnostic work, which means a skin scrape to make sure there's no mange, and a fungal culture to make sure there's no ringworm, and see what those, you know, see what those come out as. If they're negative, then you've ruled out causes number 3 and 4 of what can cause that baldness, okay? And you want to know about ringworm because that's zoonotic. We can catch it from animals. So you want to watch your own skin. Then after that, you know, you're progressively narrowing down the list of possibilities, okay? If there's no skin changes but there's baldness, that's kind of an unusual situation. There are endocrine diseases, and by endocrine I'm talking about things like thyroid. Dogs can get hypothyroidism. That will cause a sparse coat. However, endocrine diseases are usually what is called bilaterally symmetric, meaning you'll see on both sides. You know, it's not just a lone. You would not mention that his two spots were bilaterally symmetric. One's in one place, the other is in another. So I wouldn't, that would not be the first thing that I would think about. But there, if you ruled out those first four things, then, yeah, I'd start thinking about endocrine disease, either thyroid or Cushing's. Not a typical breed to get Cushing's. But worst-case scenario, you have to take a biopsy. You know, you have to take a little sample. But usually we could avoid that. Usually, depending upon the skin scrape, the fungal culture, response to empirical therapy, you'll get information or improvement, and then you're done. But, you know, sometimes once in a while, you got to do a skin biopsy to find out, or take them to a dermatologist, okay? Oh. They're a specialist, and that's what they do. They just deal with skin problems in animals, and that would be another option for you.
Well, David, thank you very much for the call. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest on Pets and Vets today. 800-348-2551 is our number. Back for the home stretch coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's Pets and Vets today. Ron Scharf is in the house. Well, not really in the house. He's in his house. He's joining us via the telephone. Our number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Dr. Scharf, two emails here, Ron, and then we'll blast through as many calls as we can. This one is from Kate in the Catskills. And Kate says, my Labrador has a fatty tumor on the side of his neck below his collar. Our vet tried to remove it, but he had to abandon the surgery because there are too many blood vessels on the surface of or going through the tumor. It's not getting bigger so far. Is there something food-related I can do to shrink it or make sure it doesn't grow any larger? I'm keeping his weight down. And that's from Kate in the Catskills.
Okay, so the first thing that I picked up on is that Kate said it was a fatty tumor.
Yeah.
Now, if it's a fatty tumor, the most common tumor in a dog other than skin tumors are fatty tumors or fatty tumors called lipomas, okay? L-I-P-O-M-A. Now, lipomas, like I say, very common and usually very easily removed surgically. Now, when I say usually, I mean 97 or 98% of the time, it is very easy to remove. You can almost just peel them out with your finger. It's pretty amazing. So you make an incision, you peel it out, you close, you're done.
Yeah.
Now, once in a while, it could be what's called an infiltrative lipoma, which means it either changes body planes, meaning it goes, you know, from the subcutis to under a muscle to over another muscle, and it kind of wends its way around the anatomy, in which case you have to be more aggressive about removing it.
Yeah.
However, I've never seen a lipoma, a fatty tumor, benign fatty tumor, that was itself infiltrated by blood vessels. So that's what makes me think it's not a lipoma, because I've never seen a vascular lipoma. I mean, fat in general is not that vascular. So I would wonder what else it is, because if it's a lipoma, then your alarm level is less because they're benign, okay, and leaving it in there is sometimes not the worst thing in the world.
Okay.
But if it's not a lipoma, who knows what it is? It could be the kind of thing you want to put more effort into getting out.
Okay. Very good. This one is from Amanda, and Amanda says, I have a male cat about 13 years old. He started placing just his front feet in the litter box and urinating on the floor. He still does number two in the litter box, and while he's older, he's generally quite healthy. We do have other cats. Is this dominance, or is there something that I should be concerned about? And that's from Amanda.
Okay. So you try getting into the head of a little cat, okay?
Yeah, right.
And it's pretty inscrutable in there. But there are some things that you could consider. One of the things that I would wonder about is there something aversive about the litter,
is this,
or the box? Is there something that he doesn't like and he's trying to stay as far away from it as possible and go through the motions of using the box but not use the box? And so is it a substrate problem? In other words, the kind of litter. For instance, a lot of cats don't like that smelly litter. A lot of litters are scented.
Yeah.
And cats don't like the scent, so it might be a scent thing, or it might be the feel of the litter, the substrate itself, and most people agree that the self-clumping litter is the best one to use. So I would use a clumping litter that does not have a scent, first of all. Second of all, if he's 13, he's getting a little older. If he has arthritis and the wall of the litter box is a little too high for his back end, his back legs to get over,
mm-hmm.
maybe he's thinking, you know, I'll just put the front end in the box and I'll do my business and I'm out of there.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get that discomfort in his hips or his spine if it is due to something like arthritis or some musculoskeletal problem. So it's either the litter or the scent of the litter or the feel of the litter or arthritis. Or it could be something else, you know. I mean, there are other cats going on, and the marking theory, I guess that's a possibility, you know. But why wouldn't the cat choose places other than the litter box to mark? Okay?
But isn't it standard operating procedure to have at least one more cat box than you have cats?
Ray, over the years, you've learned something here.
Oh, my God, I've done so many
of
these, yeah.
Great. Yes, you want to have one more litter box than the number of cats you have in your house because they're not social like dogs are. And some cats often, it's not unusual at all, for there to be too much of a population for one cat to be happy, and they're stressed. Maybe they'll hide. Maybe they'll withdraw. Maybe they'll do funny stuff at the litter box.
Yeah.
So, yes,
okay.
You want to not only have one more box than the number of cats, but you also want to clean that box as often as possible so you have a nice, inviting, clean environment. Cats are very fastidious. And if there are multiple cats and it's too dirty in there, they're going to say, no way, I'm not going to get in there. It's filthy.
Right.
So, yes, you want to clean the box often. You want to get sometimes the feel away that I've mentioned many times before. It's a pheromone that'll sometimes diminish the friction that happens, intercat friction, as a result of having too many cats around for at least one of them to feel comfortable. And sometimes it could be other things, although it doesn't sound like in this case. But I've heard of cats stopping to use litter boxes because oftentimes they're in the laundry room.
Yeah.
And they're in the middle of a movement, and the washing machine switches cycles and makes a big noise, freaks the cat out, and they're thinking, I'm not going back in there again. It's too scary in there.
Yeah,
so
okay.
I doubt that that's the situation in a 13-year-old cat that's going halfway in the box and halfway out. However, I always want to think about location because it could be another cat that might be harassing the 13-year-old and you know, like making him uncomfortable about going into the box, you know, because he's being literally harassed. Cats do that. They're sometimes not nice to each other. So that would be a fourth possibility, behavioral.
All right. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. About 10 minutes left here, a little less than that now. 800-348-2551, the number. Our buddy Bonnie in Connecticut got disconnected earlier, but here you are, Bonnie.
Okay, thank you. Hope you are all well.
And also with you.
Hi, Bonnie.
Okay. Okay. I have two cats, and one of them is an elderly, well, let's just say she's elderly. And she's starting to show her age, and she's going on the frail side, which didn't used to be her way. And,
That's all right. Don't worry. We got it. We're all set.
I freak my husband out. She
was
very disoriented afterwards. Her eyes were, pupils were different sizes, and she was very dizzy. And then when she sort of like stood up, she like walked around and around in a very tight little circle. And then she kind of like sat down and kind of calmed down. And finally, like maybe a half hour later, she was back to normal. And it isn't repeated ever again, and we've never seen anything like it before. And because we just recently had a cat that passed who had gone through neurological things and had been on all kinds of medication that kind of stoned him out, we were a little reluctant about going to the vet and saying, oh, can we put her on that medication, because she's already an old cat, and turning into a stoner on top of it all.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah. Quieting. So a couple things, Bonnie. First of all, the medication that stoned that other cat out was an anticonvulsant that probably something like phenobarbital or something. That does do that.
Yeah.
It's a barbiturate. But there are newer anticonvulsant medications that do not have that side effect. However, I'm not thinking with this 13-year-old that you're talking, well, you didn't say 13, the other one, you said elderly. What's elderly?
She's 18, sorry.
That's elderly. Okay. So with a cat that's 18, I'm not thinking anymore about epilepsy, okay? The anticonvulsant is generally used for epilepsy, though it can be used off-label for other things as well. But I'm not thinking epilepsy based on several things, Bonnie. First of all, her age. You don't get epilepsy at 18, number one. Number two, that the disorientation could happen after an epileptic seizure, but not the eyes being unequal, not the pupils being different sizes, okay?
Could be a stroke.
The dizziness also could be after epilepsy, but the circling less so, okay? So there are things about this that make me think that it is not epilepsy, and that if it's not epilepsy, then an anticonvulsant medication is not plan A, okay? That's plan B, C, or D if you can't figure out what the problem is, but the episodes are getting too often. So what I'm saying about too often is that say it's epilepsy or it is something that cannot be diagnosed, and if you can't get to the root of the problem, then an anticonvulsant is the next best thing. Well, then use one that does not have those sedating or the things that can cause them to be zoned out or stoned, you said, that kind of thing. They're less stoned. They're less stone-inducing epilepsy or anticonvulsant medication that'll help out. But at her age, I'm thinking there's something neurological. There's something in the central nervous system, Bonnie. I'm thinking it's brain because those pupils of an unequal size, unless it's an eye problem, which would not account for that grand mal thing you saw, it's brain. There's something in her brain. And going to a neurologist is very helpful. They know a ton of stuff. However, they almost always will say, I predict, well, it could be this, that, or the other thing, but we won't know for sure without an MRI. Then you have to decide, do you want to spend a chunk of change on an MRI on an 18-year-old cat, which most people will not.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that it's unavailing to go to a neurologist because they could tell you, you know, well, that sharp guy might have known what he was talking about or maybe didn't know what he was talking about. Have you ever considered so-and-so? They have a wealth of information that might point you in the right direction even without an MRI. But I'm thinking it's not epilepsy, and the anticonvulsant medication, Bonnie, would be only recommended in the event that you could not figure out what's going on.
All right.
So,
Bonnie, and I will need an anticonvulsive if you ever say that word again on the radio. Zach, the engineer, and I almost had heart attacks, but just consult the George Carlin routine about the seven words you can't say.
Oh, yeah. What are those words, Ray?
Look, we hit the eight-second delay. Everything was fine. Let's just go to Ernest. Ernest, where are you calling from? Hello.
New York. Hello.
Hello, you're on.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Mechanicsville, New York.
Oh, okay. Well, you're on the air with Dr. Ron Sheriff. We got a few minutes here. Go to town.
Fantastic. I won't drop the F-bomb.
Oh, please. Thank you.
I have two Rottweilers. I have two female Rottweilers. Both are unfixed. They're not litter mates, but they are related genetically, whatever. And they got along great. One's 3.5 and one's like 1.5. They got along great as older dog and puppy up until 1 year old and the puppy. Now they don't get along at all.
So they're both females. Is that what you said?
Yes. Yes. I'm thinking like alpha male syndrome or alpha female.
Well, it could be. I mean, absolutely. Who's boss? Okay. So there are many ways that two dogs can't get along, Ernest. And one thing I would wonder about, when I got a young things tend to be on the annoying side because they don't know better. and they start, you know, they want to be playing or they want to be doing this, that, or the other thing. And the other dog is a little more, you know, adult and maybe doesn't have as much energy or whatever. And then the young dog may be one of these types that don't take no for an answer. So they keep on going at it, going at it. That's one possibility. I don't know. You haven't said whether or not they have they actually gotten aggressive with each other, instigated by one of them? Ernest?
Ernest, are you there?
That.
Say it again.
I'm still here.
Go ahead.
Is there any instigator?
They haven't been instigated by food. No, there isn't.
How does it start? How do they not get along? What are you looking at?
They just don't get along when they're in each other's faces. They grumble and snarl and snap.
Interesting.
And there's no pattern. It's not, you said it was not food related. It's not toy related. They're not resource guarding. They're not guarding, you know, access to you. You know, sometimes they'll be territorial as far as that's my dad. That's not your dad. So you're not seeing any pattern during, you know, that precipitates that kind of growling, not getting along behavior.
No, but what we have done in the past, and we're still doing it now, We keep one in the crate and the other one's out, and we switch them off during the day. So they both have out time in the crate and walking around, but they still seem to grumble when one's in the crate and one's out of the crate.
Well, who's the grumbler?
Kind of bicker
the one in the crate or the one out of the crate?
It's hit or miss. I mean, it could be both. Huh. I mean, one could be sleeping and all of a sudden one will go up to it and just start barking, growling, grumbling.
Maybe they just don't like each other, Doc.
The darndest thing.
Yeah. Well, this is it. Well, first of all, there's a lot of information that needs to be gathered to hopefully point to a direction that you could address. Because based on, you know, just growling without any other context is kind of brutal as far as figuring out what's going on.
Ernest, yeah.
What you need to do is you need to watch the dogs. And you watch their interplay. You watch, like, what are the circumstances? What's the time of day? What's the proximity to meal time? Who's getting a treat? How does the other one deal with it? Who's getting a toy? How does the other one deal with it? And you need to watch them in different situations during the day to find out, are there any things that set off the growling?
Yeah.
Because you need to be a detective. You need to figure out what the context is, and then you might be able to say, well, it looks like it might be resource gardening, or it might be the resource might be you. You know, it might be, I'm dad's number one. No, I'm dad's number one. You know, it could be, you know, they could do anything, just like, you know, immature people, you know, just like you know, junior high school kids getting at each other's throats, and you know they're barbaric. So, so who knows what's going on? You need to figure out clues. You need to look at where the clues are, Ernest.
Well, Ron, we are out of time, sir. Thank you for being here. We appreciate
just
you
like
joining.
That?
Yeah, man, it went fast. And I'll tell you what, next time, hopefully things will have opened up. We'll have you back in the studio. But thank you for being here. Support comes from Paul Smith's College, students pursuing degrees in environmental studies, recreation, science, forestry, management, and more. Hands-on education at the college's 14,000-acre lakeside campus, paulsmiths.edu. Daughters of Sarah Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, Albany, New York, offering rehabilitation therapy, restorative, and skilled nursing care for seniors, daughtersofsarah.org. At Fadigan's Nursery, Latham, New York, now offering curbside pickup, deliveries, and by-appointment shopping, featuring herbs and veggies, perennials, flowering shrubs and trees, and more, fadigans.com. Once again, thanks to Ron Scharf for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Sorry if you didn't get through. We'll do it again soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Charlene Knight answered the calls. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. For today, anyway, I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, Gordon Fricke will answer your car questions. Right now, stand by for 51%.